everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning and welcome to the program. Today we're going to be sharing with you articles from the July-August issue of Share International magazine, and we'll start with an article from Benjamin Krem's master titled The One Who Knocks. There comes a time in the life of every nation when a period of soul searching must take place, when the ideals enshrined in its constitution, written or not, must be looked at again in the light of actual achievement and a reassessment of that achievement made. When this is done with honesty and candor, a new and sobering realism will replace the present self-congratulation in which the leaders of many nations indulge, hoping thereby to maintain their faltering grip on the lives of their peoples. Their time is all but over.
Events shortly to occur will redistribute the power of governments and emancipate the people. The sham democracy of today will give way to true participation and open a new chapter in man's long quest for justice and freedom. Even as these words are being written, a plan is being set in motion which will speed this process and bring joy to the pain-wrecked hearts of millions. Patiently they wait the unexpected pour. Herded like cattle in the parched and pitiless desert, homeless and workless in the proud cities of the world, farming barren rock in the high plateau, they await deliverance which now knocks upon the door.
Soon they will see their deliverer. Many have already done so and live but to see his face again. In the battlefields which disgrace this time, he appears with equal grace to all. Soon, the many miracles he has wrought will endear him to the hearts of men and women everywhere. The healing waters will be discovered one by one, and a great cleansing of men's temples will begin. History teaches that nothing happens twice in the exact same way. Time and evolution ensure renewal of events. Those who await a saviour in the manner of the past will wait in vain. New times demand new methods and new problems, new solutions.
Thus it is that Maitreya addresses himself to the present situation, to the problems which beset all men, hunger and strife, planetary equilibrium, sharing and justice, the ways of peace and war. That he comes to aid men is not in doubt, but he comes primarily to teach. Heed then his teachings, for they contain the essence of life, and by their guidance and inspiration can you reach the stars. When you are asked, what will the future bring? Tell them this. A bright star has forsaken its rightful place in the firmament and has chosen to walk among men, bringing gifts as yet unseen on earth. By name Maitreya, this blessed one will teach men the ways of what they can become. He will show them the secret entrance to the heart of God and lead them therein. He will walk with men and angels and relate these two. By example and teaching, he will show the way to self-salvation. He will regenerate and rejuvenate the world. Listen for his knock. And that was from January 1993.
Now moving on to an article titled Less is More, How Degrowth Will Save the World. It's by Jason Hickel, and he is an economic anthropologist, a Fulbright scholar and fellow of the Royal Society of Arts. He is originally from Eswatini, which is was Swaziland, and spent a number of years with migrant workers in South Africa, writing about exploitation and political resistance in the wake of apartheid. He writes regularly for The Guardian and Al Jazeera and Foreign Policy, serves as an advisor for the Green New Deal for Europe, and sits on the Lancet Commission for Reparations and Redistributive Justice. So it begins as follows, and it's a review, by the way, by Phyllis Krem. First with a quote, this is from The Guardian, March 2023. The first mission of a Labour government is to secure the highest sustained growth in the G7. We will create good jobs and productivity growth across every part of our country. And that was a quote from Rachel Reeves, the Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, the Labour Party in the UK. And here's another quote from her. As Britain is expected to be the only major industrialised country to see its economy shrink this year amid rising interest rates and higher taxes, the government is frantically trying to find ways to boost economic growth. The idea of economic growth as necessary and clearly a good thing is entrenched in our day-to-day thinking and speaking. Our politicians insist that growth is what they aim for, as if it is obvious. We don't necessarily know what growth means, but the idea that we can get richer and richer, do better than our parents, and that our children will do even better, is deeply embedded in popular discourse. Politicians think that they must emphasise it and that economies that are growing less are clearly in a bad way. And it is true that for those of us in the developed world, lives have become better, at least materially, along with, however, the gross inequality that in recent decades has become so much worse, where the rich display their wealth before the poor, as Maitreya says.
But in recent years, there is an increasingly vocal counter-movement. If we are to survive as a species, if planet Earth itself is to survive, perpetual growth cannot be our aim. That is the gist of Jason Hickel's book, Less is More, How Degrowth Will Save the World. His argument is persuasive and with a trenchant style of writing to match, we have to take notice. Hickel is an excellent advocate for sharing the world's resources. It seems perfectly logical. Our planet is burning. People are dying from pollution, greed, and waste. We are killing ourselves, and all that seems to sustain us is this mythical nirvana of economic growth, without which, they say, we will stagnate. Hickel sets out to show that this is indeed a myth.
The book Less is More begins with the disappearance of the insects. Hickel cites his homeland in southern Africa and Germany, where a study showed that over 25 years, three quarters of flying insects had vanished from land converted from forest to farmland. And everywhere, insect pollinators were disappearing. A report issued by an international group of scientists ended with the statement, "Nature is under siege." Hickel continues with the dire effects of the climate emergency. He paints a picture of enormous apocalyptic change to our planet unless we ourselves and our systems change, and we need to change very quickly indeed.
The first half of the book is titled More is Less. Hickel writes an excoriating historical account of the growth of Western capitalism, how everything of real value has been sacrificed to the profit motive, and where exploitation both of nature and people is an inherent inevitable part. The very titles of each section tells their own story. Capitalism, a creation story. Rise of the juggernaut. Will technology save us? No, he calls us it. Green growth is a pipe dream, and degrowth is the only viable option. However, Hickel's book is not about fear or despair, but hope, as he sets out in the second part of the book, Less is More. This is also made up of three sections. Secrets of the Good Life, Pathways to a Post-Capitalistic World. Everything is connected.
In the Secrets of the Good Life segment, he says, or shows how, I should say, in a comparison of different countries, happiness, well-being, and a sense of meaning do not result, as conventional thinking assumes, from a constant increase in growth, a high GDP, but, as in Costa Rica, whose income is a fifth of that of the US, from organizing production around human well-being, investing in public goods, and distributing income and opportunity more fairly. Hickel lists countries, and it is an extensive list, that have a better measure of well-being than the US, although it has the highest GDP, gross domestic product. The sense of meaning comes where people feel they have the opportunity to express certain human qualities. And he says, we humans are evolved for sharing, cooperation, and community. Over and over again, we see that the excess GDP that characterizes the richest nations wins them nothing when it comes to what really matters.
On the contrary, the pursuit of growth as a sole economic aim is already high income country, in already high income countries is exacerbating inequality and contributes to problems like stress and depressions from overwork. Throughout his book, Hickel advocating for both greater individual and, more importantly, global equality. Simply, the rich consume more than they need and use more energy than they need, with its adverse impact on the planet. Public transport, for instance, uses less energy per capita than private cars and planes. Hickel quotes Robert Kennedy, who said in 1968, GDP measures neither our wit nor our courage, neither our compassion nor our devotion to our country. It measures everything except that which makes life worthwhile.
The answer? Good public systems, health, transport, education, mean less pressure both on the planet and on individuals, and less need for growth. As Hickel says, we do not need more growth to achieve our social goals. It is excellent news that already prosperous countries can deliver human well-being without the need for more economic growth. This can also impact on the living world. People who are contented have less yearning for material goods, which in turn has an impact on the natural world and the ecology of the planet.
Here, Hickel shows that developed countries are obsessed at present with the threat of recession. But he points out that degrowth is not the same as recession. A recession is caused when growth is aimed at and then stops. Degrowth is completely different. It's about shifting to a different kind of economy altogether, an economy that doesn't need growth in the first place, an economy that's organized around human flourishing and ecological stability rather than the constant accumulation of capital. Degrowth represents release. It represents an opportunity for healing, recovery, and repair.
In the final section of the book, Hickel draws on the beliefs of the indigenous peoples to stress the fundamental interdependence of all nature and the essential unity of all life. He says, we must learn to see ourselves once again as part of a broader community of living beings. Everything is intimately interconnected. This belief underpins the whole book. And the title again before we move on is Less is More, How Degrowth Will Save the World.
Right, now we have an article by Megan Shearer. It's called Combating Greenwashing. Greenwashing refers to the marketing practice where businesses seek to capitalize on the growing movement for environmentally sound products by selling goods labeled as green that actually are not. Phrases such as eco-friendly, ethical, sustainable, naturally sourced, earth-friendly, 100% organic, cruelty-free and carbon neutral are used to persuade the consumer that their product is good for the planet. In the EU, for example, a study published in 2020 found that more than half, that's 53%, of green claim on products were deemed to be vague, misleading or unfounded, while 40% were unsubstantiated. According to Johnny White, a director at advertising agency AMVBBDO, and he says, misleading environmental claims are under the microscope from advertising regulators, consumer watchdogs, and even governments. The risk of getting it wrong are huge, with brands being shamed publicly when they are guilty of misleading the public.
One example of greenwashing in the UK relates to employer schemes or private pensions, into which just under 50% of all UK employees now pay, and where they can make a choice about how their money is invested. Many choose to invest in a fund that emphasises sustainability. The financial industry has reacted by creating funds labelled as sustainable, climate, carbon, transition, or ESG, which is short for environmental, social, and governance. Maeve O'Connor, an analyst at the Carbon Tracker Initiative and one of the authors of a report analysing where funds were invested, said, "What we found is that these funds, despite their names, can often include sometimes large positions in fossil fuel companies. For retail investors, that could be seen to be misleading. If I'm investing in a green fund, do I really want my investment to be going to ExxonMobil? Probably not."
Another UK example of greenwashing concerns a Unilever-owned washing detergent brand. A TV advert claimed that its new product was more sustainable than its last. Their Kinder to Our Planet campaign called viewers to action with a voiceover. "For real change to happen, we need to roll up our sleeves and get dirty," with images of children planting trees and collecting plastic from the ocean. Promotion of the brand's new formulation, with plant-based stain removers and recycled bottles, came under fire. The UK Advertising Standard Authority, ASA, took action against Persil, saying the brand had failed to substantiate its environmental claims that the new product was more sustainable than its previous one.
And as we're running short of time, we'll skip to the last paragraph. Zorka Millen, a senior advisor at Global Witness, speaking in relation to a greenwashing complaint against Shell in the US, said earlier this year that overstating investments in renewables and misleading the public is pure greenwashing. Climate action cannot be dreamed up in marketing departments. Instead, it must underpin the concrete activity of the company as a whole. With a growing demand from consumers and governments for honesty relating to a business's environmental credentials, it's likely that the practice of greenwashing will gradually become less acceptable worldwide, enabling people to make informed choices that are more supportive of a healthy planet. Thank you very much for listening. For more information, check out the website share-international.org, and wishing you all a lovely week.